Devices Radio Network.
If you've enjoyed Scott Stevenson's contribution to Muscle Minds, you can learn more about him, his products, and his services at his website, fortitudetraining.net. Those who purchase Scott's book or any of his coaching products receive a free subscription to his message board where he answers questions daily. So check out fortitudetraining.net. Muscle Minds is made possible in part by Jordan Peters. If you've enjoyed listening to Jordan today, check out his website, trainedbyjp.com. The site offers over 50 hours of video content covering everything from the most basic approach to training and nutrition for beginners, all the way through advanced anabolic and insulin strategies for seasoned competitors. You can follow Jordan and Corin's blog as they prep for their next shows and have questions answered daily on their forum section. So check out trainedbyjp.com. The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for entertainment and educational purposes only.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger. Faster.
To Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson, Jordan Peters, and Scott McNally, part of the Advices Radio Network, a new voice in bodybuilding podcasting, presented by Max Gear.
Welcome back to Muscle Minds, episode number 5. With me, as always, are two very muscular minds, Jordan Peters and Dr. Scott Stevenson. Plus, today, we have a really special guest. We have Corin Inkman, who is Jordan's partner. So, guys, welcome to the show. I'll get to you in just a minute, Corin. But before that, let me introduce the guys. Jordan, Scott, how's everybody doing today? Scott, I hear that you're under the weather.
Yeah, I've just been burning the candle at both ends, and I kind of knew better. Actually, Jordan called me on it. I was kind of on the verge might be getting sick, might not be getting sick, and I went into the gym and trained legs, and I could tell after the first kind of diabolical set, I'm like, no, I'm not going to do so well. But of course, the knucklehead in me lives strong. And I pushed through the workout and just gradually gotten worse.
Oh, man.
So I'm hitting it full force with herbs, and I'll be over it, in a few days, I think.
You're supposed to be my role model here. You're supposed to show me what I should be doing, and you're not setting a good example right now.
Well, you know, what part of it was is that I actually, when I felt good earlier in that week, and so here's the role model part, I'll redeem myself, is I had two friends that I met with on those days. And one guy had contacted me like 10 days before. He wanted to work out and go grab some food. So that was Saturday. And the other person wanted to meet after about when I would train. So I went into train, not quite knowing what was up. Instead of like going home, mm-hmm. which I could have done, I had to go meet this person to eat. So I'm like, I'd sort of make promises to folks. So not that I'm like, woohoo, poor Scott, but, I just like to, these were, important get together. So, I kind of recognized what was happening, and I don't think I'm going to die from it, but that's not the excuse. That's sort of the reason, I think. So
understandable.
So I was doing good things for good people, and that's what you should focus on, Scott. That's the role model. Image I'm trying to portray here.
Yeah, I can relate though, man. I did pretty much the exact same thing last week, and thankfully I'm coming around. And thankfully too that we're not doing this in person, so you can't blame me for having gotten you sick.
I know where I got it from, but I'm not going to say. I'm seeking suspicion. Uh-oh. Yeah.
So before we get to everything else, too, I wanted to mention. There's a lot of excitement going on right now
Tell me about the supplement company launch.
Yeah, this is John Meadows Supplement Company. It is his own that he has started along with Ed Koo, who a lot of people know from Facebook, and he posts far and wide. We were out in California last weekend, so 7 or 8 days ago.
Yeah.
Filming video clips and training and just putting together some of the promotional material for this supplement line. My role in the line is sort of, we've been coming up with different titles for me. I think like the secretary of Shreditivity and all sorts of things like that. But basically I'm the sort of the person to take some of the science underlying the ingredients that have been combined in these, right, not just four products, and make it understandable for people. So I'm kind of the chief science officer, what have you. And it's pretty cool. John's created, he's got the formulators came up with this before I was sort of brought on board. And so we've all conferred about how everything fits together. And these are some pretty cool novel ingredients. And the thing I like about it most and is that it's a full transparency model. Like literally everything, there's no proprietary blends. The amounts of everything is right there on the bottle. And the COAs will be available too. Literally when we were out there in California, we were in the factory where everything was being made, which is pretty cool. Spent an entire morning walking around, and I even think I filmed a clip like literally standing there with each of the individual bags for the ingredients that would go into, I think it was the ARC reactor, which is the pre-workout. And, you know, there's like, 16 things in there, all the different bits and pieces. So we got to see it like literally as it was being made.
Yeah.
And the ingredients just, they're pretty cool. Like as an example, the fat burner is called Lipocalypse. Of course, anyone who knows John and John's, training programs, he loves cartoon characters, man. So, there's a theme there that's never going to die with anything that John puts out, I don't think. That's sort of how he brands things, and that's pretty cool. So the idea is, it's a fat-destroying supplement, but he's got some ingredients in there. Two things, for instance, that that work via the sympathetic nervous system. They actually bind, one of them is a capsaicinoid compound, and the other thing is made from grains of paradise, and both of these interact with the brain to stimulate the sympathetic nervous system to create lipolysis, to induce lipolysis.
Okay.
And they also, in the animal research, they shift white adipose tissue into beige and brown adipose tissue. So that's a process that obviously takes some time to happen. That's just one example in this fat burner whereby you start taking it and you get an immediate effect because the dose itself has its own effect, but over time, it'll start working better and better and better, theoretically, of course. So it's a fat burner that, you don't have to, continue to up the dose with over and over and over. It's something that's gonna work better the longer you use it. So, the way in which they piece together all these ingredients is pretty slick. It's pretty cool. I'm impressed, literally just knowing what I know now, because I had to dig in and learn a lot about a lot of these ingredients. So that I could transfer the information and talk about it the way I just did, but it's pretty cool stuff. It's not going to be what happened with that other supplement company. This is his own gig.
So he's got total control of what's going on.
Absolutely, he's the man. This is his baby.
Interesting.
So yeah, it's very, very cool. So
well, this is exciting. This is really cool because I know that everybody, including myself, I really believed in the products that had his name on them because they had his name on them. And now I'm super excited to see what he comes out with here, what you guys come out with. And the name of the company is it Granite Supplements?
Granite Supplements. And obviously, people love that name because John's known for his granite hard conditioning on stage, kind of fits hard as a rock,
Yeah.
Just solid. There's, so many connotations that come along with that, with the word granite. So I like what he's putting forth with that.
Yeah, it's going to be really exciting. This is going to be really big for 2017. There's no question. And guys like you and John and Ed Koo, for those of you guys who don't know Ed, he is also the owner of Iron Rebel, which is awesome clothing line. I've got a bunch of their shirts and I got a really cool hoodie by them. And of course, you know, they do powerlifting gear. So I just bought their knee sleeves not too long ago, man. They're awesome knee sleeves. I got the sport version, I believe they're called, because I don't need anything that's like super, super resistant. I don't want it to actually help me on my lifts. I just want it to kind of hold my knee together, you know?
Right. Yeah. Ed's a stickler for high quality materials, high quality apparel. And we talked about that. It was Ed and John and I, and then Miranda Souza and Ariel Cutts, and I always forget his last name, Ariel's last name. Two of the other representatives, which you guys will come to know if you follow along with the Granite Supplements gig. And we were out there. Ariel was only there for about a day, but we were out with Ed. You know, I was there basically in continuous contact with him, aside from, you know, sleeping at the hotel for brief periods. Yeah. And so we got to talk a lot, and like, he's a total stickler for high quality gear and high quality materials and the apparel they put out. He does stuff right. He does not, in no way, shape, or form, does he let anything be anything but the best. I mean, literally.
Yeah, I got a chance to meet him a couple times now.
Oh,
and
yeah?
One time was at the Geared Up gathering here in Detroit, and the other time was at the Arnold. And when we were at the Arnold, he was showing me and VJ the quality of his shirts. I mean, he just got so excited talking about this stuff. You know, you can tell how much he puts into it and how much he cares about what he's doing. Like, he would show us, like, there's this little strip of material that the average consumer might just look at that and not think too much of it. But he was like, just to do this alone takes an extra, you know, 3 weeks of production and, you know, costs extra money to do this. But it's these details that he puts into it. And I'm sure that if he's involved here, that's just going to carry over.
Yeah, he's super passionate about pretty much everything he does. Actually, we were talking shop last night about ketogenic diets, like on the phone. He's starting to kind of tap into me, and we're you know, because he's a guy who's been training for a while, so we've been chit-chatting about things. And he trains like a maniac. He was telling me a story. He was with Derek Farnsworth like a couple months before that, and they did, get this Jordan, this is going to be right down your alley, they did a leg workout where the goal was just to get to 1,000 reps.
Jeez.
1,000. He said they were just absolutely annihilated. Like, everything was sore. There wasn't anything else. I mean, they just, like, you know, just destroyed. Now, that's just, obviously, that's not going to, it's not going to foster improvement as a bodybuilder necessarily. but that's just the kind of drive that he has. You know, he goes full on.
Heck yeah.
He only kind of knows one gear, and it's all go.
Heck yeah. So at the release of this episode, I believe that this is going to coincide with the launch of Granite Supplements. Where can people reach out to find this company?
GraniteSupplements.com.
All right. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
It should probably be easy to Google, et cetera, but, you know, nothing complicated. If, you know, for those people who like to save money, I mean, that's probably most people. I've also got a discount code too they can use.
Okay.
For, I think it's 15% off. S Stevenson 15.
Okay.
So STEVENSON 15. And that gives them 15% off.
Awesome.
Of goodies. Yeah. Well, I got one last thing, but one last plug. I got to thank Mike from Best Bar Ever.
Oh, hell yeah.
Thanks, John's. Yeah, I know you guys love me. So he sent me a couple of the, I think it's the cookie dough.
Oh, they're great.
Bars. Send me two bars. They just showed up. I'm like, what is this? And so I was sort of, you know, milking my way through them. And then since I've been sick for the last few days, I burnt through like a box and a half.
Hell yeah.
I got to thank him for helping me hold on to a little bit of weight while I'm dealing with this this nasty bug I have.
Mike's awesome, and he's another guy too that just puts a lot into his products. You know, those bars are all whole food. It's like a solid food product. This is not like your average, you know, just maltodextrin type thing.
Right. Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that's, it's a real food, which is awesome to see. You know, I was, because I talked with John about this, and when he first came out with that, and I was, you know, because there are food like that, food bars like that. They've been around for a while. If you go into the alternative health food stores,
okay,
but they don't sell all that well. You know, they're only for a lot of times people who are eating, you know, vegan diets or what have you, who are very, very particular. But it's, I'm really, really happy that bodybuilders are actually, you know, they're okay with that.
Yeah,
you know, they don't mind having it refrigerated. It's just like real food. It's really not that big of a deal. You refrigerate your food, you refrigerate your bars, but I'm glad that wasn't a big hurdle to those selling. Obviously, I think probably because they taste awesome.
Oh yeah, I've got a tip for you too. Now, I won't be surprised, Scott, if you don't have one, because I know you're kind of a hippie. You're telling me about these Chinese herbs. Do you have a microwave?
Yes, I had to get a microwave.
Okay. Oh. Here's my pro tip for the day: the cookie dough bar. Put that, take it out of the wrapper and put it on a plate and put that in the microwave for like 11 or 12 seconds. And it's going to blow your mind. That's all I have to say.
Okay. It'll taste like cookie dough, I imagine.
Oh, it, yes.
Right on.
All right. So, hey, Jordan, man, I'm on Instagram here and I'm seeing you do a stiff leg deadlift with, it looks like, what, 6 plates? Did you just do this today?
Yeah, that was just today.
Today was leg day then, and did you and Corin both train legs?
We did, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm at the end of a run of just feeling fucking destroyed. So I'm going to stop before I get ill.
Okay, so that's what you were saying yesterday, that you're going to take the week off, right?
Sure, I'm just going to do one more session tomorrow, which will be a push session, and then I'm resting for a week.
And I'm making him rest.
So, Corin, I hear we've got you here with us too. Are you going to take the week off as well?
Yeah, I will do. I don't really want to.
Yeah, I'm sure that overall you'll probably benefit from it too. Everything I've seen you do, all the videos I've watched of you, and just looking at the quality of the muscle on your physique, you obviously push hard, push just as hard as Jordan. And maybe I even heard on the show here that maybe you push a little harder sometimes too. I'm sure you'll do good with a week off.
Yeah, she trains harder than I do, but mine will just probably look more impressive because of the loading, but she can dig in more for those extra grindy reps a little bit better than I can, actually.
It's just a bit fitter.
Yeah, I think the fitness component comes into play there.
Mm.
Like, I'll gas out a little bit before, especially when I'm heavy. Like when I'm like 280-ish, sometimes my lungs will give out before my legs, which is a bit annoying. Whereas obviously she can just keep going and going.
Nice. Well, I'm sure that's good for you too, Jordan, to help continue to push you and probably keep you moving a little faster than you may have, you know, wanted to had you not had that catalyst with you.
It depends. When I get into a comp prep and as I start to get lighter, it's nice because then I do start to up the pace as I go.
Okay.
During the off season when I'm heavy, I can't train faster if I'm loading the way that I am at the moment.
Mm.
Like, I'm doing shit that I've just never done before, like this, and it's destroying me. Like, the deadlift that I did in the week was an all-time PB, and I've not felt that feeling the day after for a very long time.
It definitely took a good, 72 hours?
Yeah, I literally, Scott and I have mentioned this before, like, you feel like you've been tranquilized, and
yeah.
I was in a really fucking bad way.
You've acting that way as well.
for a few days, but it was good. I was happy though. I mean, I watched back that video and it just makes me smile. That was a good one.
Hell yeah. Now, Corin, let's just dive right in here, and I've got a whole bunch of questions for you. You know, we had people submitting questions at Facebook, people submitting questions at the Advices Radio forum page, and I got a couple of personal messages too. So there's a lot of people that wanted to ask you stuff. So thank you first of all for coming on with us, because we've wanted to get you on for a long time. And when we first all started working together, you were in the midst of your contest prep, so you didn't have time. So thank you today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on.
So while we're talking about training, I think that's a great place to start. One of the listeners had asked, you know, you train so intensely, which we've already mentioned here today. Do you use any type of visualization techniques to achieve this? And if so, what tips would you have for the listeners on how to increase their intensity?
I think the visualization is really important, and I definitely use that as a tool closer to powerlifting meets, because if you really don't believe you're going to get the rep, you really won't. I've found that out. If I've ever had self-doubt before a set into a powerlifting meet or even on the day, then if you've already told yourself you're not going to get it, then you won't get it. So visualization for powerlifting I do find really helpful. Again, with that sort of training, it's very very kind of, what's the word? It escapes me at the moment, ritualistic. So obviously I like to do the same thing before I get under the bar. So sort of tie my shoes and then put my knee sleeves on all in the same order. And that kind of process helps me mentally get prepared and visualize what I'm about to do. On a day-to-day sort of basis in the gym, I don't do that so much. But it's more, I'm accountable to my logbook. So I don't have to visualize myself doing it, because sometimes it really feels like that's not going to happen. But if my logbook is telling me that I need 9 reps, then I'm actually going to not get away from the bar until I've got 9 reps. So that takes over from visualization at some stages. It's more just the sort of grit and willpower and not having to write a rubbish number in my logbook, because that really... That would ruin my mind. So visualization for powerlifting comp and definitely on the day, and for kind of bigger one rep maxes, that kind of thing, I definitely visualize. But for other sets throughout a standard gym session, it's more just visualization on the logbook and just ensure you get that number.
Okay, interesting. Now, do you train with Jordan every workout? Do you guys always go to the gym together?
Yeah.
Okay, do you feel like... I mean, working with him, both of you guys are, you know, both really pushing. Do you feel that you push each other, that your intensity fuels his and vice versa?
Yeah, definitely. We definitely feed off each other, and it's great when we're in the same phase. If we're both dieting for a competition, that's really nice, because we've both got the same focus. We've both probably a really similar amount of weeks out from a comp. It's a little bit harder if we're in different phases. To say I'm, you know, real far from a comp in an off season and I'm in a surplus or whatever, then, and Jordan's more tired because he's in comp prep, it then gets harder, because it's a whole other ball game being in comp prep and just feeling like shit sometimes during your sessions and being with someone who's like, yeah, come on, let's go. So all that, but you know, 99% of the time I have a better session with Jordan than without. I definitely, at the moment as well, I'm not at my strongest, but Jordan is, and he, every time I see him lift the bar and get a PB, I'm like, oh, for God's sake. It definitely kind of steps up my game, because I don't want to be left too far behind.
Yeah.
And I don't, in terms of sort of practical numbers, I'm never going to sit there deadlift 260 kilos. But I'm talking, you know, comparative numbers here.
Sure.
It definitely helps. And I know as well, not, you know, if you have a set when maybe you're mid-session and you're absolutely exhausted by that phase, and you know you've only got to get sort of 9 reps, that you actually can get 9 quite easily, and you know there's a 10th there. If Jordan's there watching, I'd never marginally beat my logbook. I'll always try and dog out just a few extra, just to try and impress him and be like, you know, check this out. This is... got it, kind of thing. So it definitely, I hate training with anyone else, really. I like training with Jordan, and I do feel we bounce off each other. I keep the pace a little bit faster as well, because I'm like lighter and thicker. I'm not carrying around body weight he is, so I manage to keep that intensity through pace. But Jordan is the flip side, and actually manages to sort of calm me down and say, hang on, because this set's really important. You know, that's another thing to keep in mind as well when you're training. So I definitely feel the benefit, and we definitely bounce off each other, in my opinion.
Interesting. And it sounds like you're telling me that you kind of balance each other out, because I know Scott and Jordan had mentioned when you guys all trained together, I think it was in Tampa, that you were training circles around them. You were pushing them around the gym, but it sounds like he slows you down too, huh? When you need to be slowed down.
Yeah, exactly. Like as it gets sort of heavier, and like, you know, we were just discussing earlier, when you're hitting all time PBs,
yeah,
and your recoverability after a set is going to be impaired for quite a time, I do have to sort of bite my tongue and be like, don't get frustrated because you haven't just done that. So I occasionally I do progress through the session a little bit more, but in honesty, I will slow myself down and ensure we're on the same page, and I'll often unload and load the bar as well. So that will give me something to do during his rest periods, and it saves him doing it as well. So it works again on another practical level, that I'll just do the bar, loader and unloader, and that kind of handles my my need to move a little bit faster. So, yeah, definitely complementary of each other.
Okay. Now, one of the listeners had asked a question about the differences between men and women in training. And he felt that, especially when people are earlier or newer to training, that he said that he's noticed with his clients that women have a harder time kind of reaching that high intensity level of understanding how to push really hard to those one rep maxes and stuff and be able to really tax themselves. Do you feel there are differences in training between men and women outside of the weights themselves?
From a personal perspective, I don't think there should be. And honestly, it's kind of polar opposite to the experience I've had. If I was to train clients in person, I've actually found the females to, in general, dig in a little bit more.
Yeah.
To be able to tolerate those reps, those hard, grueling, eccentric failure reps, whereas men tend to not do them as much, actually, in my experience. I think it could be sort of a bit of a psychological thing that women may feel, if they're just starting out, they may feel a little bit intimidated in a gym environment, and therefore they don't want to take it to that nth degree, because obviously when you do the last steps, when you're going to fail, you do make stupid noises, you make stupid facial expressions, and I think it's probably more a case of them being perhaps a little bit embarrassed to do that. So I don't think it's a lack of wanting to take it to failure or wanting to bring intensity. I think it's almost more, stop now before I grunt on this set. Whereas I think for men, it's a little bit more acceptable.
Yeah.
Sort of socially, if you see what I'm coming from on that perspective. So I don't, there isn't, in my opinion, there shouldn't and isn't too much of a difference between males and females that I've had experience either training with or written plans for. I think it could just be an intimidation thing within the gym environment, to be honest.
That makes sense. So obviously we've talked about, your relationship to Jordan and how you two push each other. Outside of your relationship, I look at your pictures on Facebook and I see, somebody who has made a huge transformation with their physique. And I'm just curious to know, what were the things that you saw that you envisioned in your head that made you say, I'm going to make this into reality?
In honesty, it kind of happened by mistake. I never started this journey and this path with an outcome in mind, to be honest. I started training when I met, I'd done sort of gymnastics before in the past and kickboxing, and I'd always been very sporty, but I'd never done anything to a real high level, and I didn't even own a gym membership when I first met Jordan. Then after a while of being with him, he kind of said, do you fancy doing a session in the gym? And I was like, okay, fine. And then I got into it, and like every sort of young 20-year-old female, they want to look a bit slimmer and feel a bit nicer in a bikini or whatever. So
sure,
it stemmed from that. And then as we progressed, obviously I just really got into it and really enjoyed it. And it just progressed into something that I really wanted to be a big part of my life. And it turned out that I was quite strong and quite good at it. So then Jordan said, do you fancy doing a powerlifting meet? And I literally was just, it was as simple as that. And I literally just said, okay. And then we did it, not really knowing what we were doing. We've never really thought about periodizing a training plan for powerlifting, etc. And it's just escalated from there. And then obviously now I do have fixed goals and I do aspire to different physiques. But in honesty, it really didn't start with an aspiration or an intention to even do this. It started as me wanting to get a little bit fitter. And then as I realized how much I loved it, and it clicked. And it's now what I do and what I am.
Nice. So, Jordan, would you ever have imagined that Corin was going to take it this far, all the way back then?
When the first time that she ever trained with me, I realized that she wasn't normal.
How so?
Well, within a year of training, she had already taken British powerlifting records.
No kidding.
She'd never trained before, so within a year she did that, and then within 2 years she'd taken European records, and then by year three she won a world title. So then it was like, but immediately in those first 6 months, it was very apparent that like holy shit, this girl's can train really, really, really hard, and actually pretty damn strong. And then I started like Googling like record numbers, and we were like, you could win this. Like, so she went to her first powerlifting meet, and then she won the whole overall.
No kidding.
So she won her class, and then she was awarded an overall lifter's trophy. And when she turned up, she weighed in on the day. She didn't have a clue what to do. And afterwards, I remember one of the presidents of the federation came up to her and was like, where the fuck have you come from? they were just in shock. It was a really funny moment, actually. And we're still really good friends with all of that lot now. But it was funny. They were literally just like, what has just happened? I'll always remember that moment with a lot of fondness, to be honest. It was quite a fun day. But then obviously she started to train for the stage as well, once we realized that she had a decent amount of muscle mass. And then she made dieting look as easy as she makes getting strong. So just through the same kind of stubborn willpower, I suppose. I'm not saying this from a perspective that it came easy, like reaching a goal, but the working hard part seemed to come easy. So it's not like she did nothing and it just happened. She just had an ability to find the intensity you need to get it done, and she could sustain it.
Nice.
So that was what was so impressive. It was like, up to that moment in time, I've been doing this for a bit.
Yeah.
And I already could tell mentally she was stronger than I was. And I was just like, for fuck's sake. So it was pretty cool.
That's awesome. So, you know, kind of on that note then, so we're talking about how you initially started powerlifting, Corin, and then you eventually transitioned into actually, you know, using your physique as the end goal. You're super lean. You look like you maintain very low body fat in the off season. Is this something that comes natural to you? Back when, before physique development was your key goal, were you lean then too?
No.
No?
This is a new thing. This is what people say to me all the time. They're like, oh, you're so lucky. Your genetics are crazy. I'm not genetically lean. Trust me. The first diet I ever did, I got in okay condition, as in I wouldn't even call it condition, just like a girl that was quite slim. But the thing is, it wasn't long ago that I was weighing in at like 90 kilos. And that was pure fat. So no, it doesn't come naturally. It didn't happen easily. The turning point really was 2014. I I got truly lean that year. And that was through literally eating like 600 calories and doing about 4 hours cardio a day, HIT, you name it. Like, it was horrendous. And this is why people say, oh, God, you can eat so much. And it's, but I didn't to get there. I got the fat off the way we all have to get it off. I ate nothing. I ate pro-veg meals all day and did grueling hours of cardio. I used to get up at 3 a.m, do an hour of cardio before going to work in a bakery all day. Then I'd come home and potentially still have either a training session and a cardio session.
Yeah.
Or two cardio sessions. Jeez. And all this time, I was eating pro-veg meals. So it didn't come easily. But when I got lean in 2014, after that, my body and myself, I did not want to regain and re-go back to that place of being fat. I didn't like it. I didn't want to go there again.
Yeah.
So since then, I've kept lean and in some instances, kept too lean. Held me back from growing, and I fully recognize that now. But when you're in a kind of mental place where it's cool to be lean, it's really difficult, especially as a female, I think, to let go of that. But now, yeah, I do stay in good condition all year round, and I always will, because it's beneficial. I don't feel a need. I eat a lot, which is great. So now my body seems to like being lean. I think it's, I've sat here for a good 2 years, and I think the body kind of finds like an equilibrium. And I'd have to, like, don't get me wrong, yeah, I could get fat if you all wanted to see it. Like, I could just, I'm a big eater as well.
Okay.
And buy those and get back up to 90 kilos if you want to see what that looks like. But it's not beneficial to the goal. So, and you know, from the perspective of powerlifting as well, if I want to break world records and set ridiculous targets and numbers, I want to do that in a lighter weight category. If I want to squat or deadlift 3 times my own body weight, I'm going to be better off doing that at like the 70 kilo mark than the 90 kilo mark. So everything now focuses on keeping a relatively good body composition so I can swing in and out of powerlifting prep, physique prep, off season, where obviously I chill out completely. And if my body fat is always in a really optimal position, then I'm never going to have a stress getting into shape or getting into a weight class or anything. So it didn't come easily, but now I'm here, I find it easy to stay here. And I don't feel tired or anything like that at all. Doesn't stress me out at all. Nice. I could rock around more than this if I wanted. It doesn't faze me. So lucky in that sense, but I think I'm just used to being lean now.
We talk about that a lot here on Muscle Minds, about the mindset of dieting and the difference, as Scott has called it, the difference between suffering and discomfort. You know, we choose to suffer versus, no matter what, it's going to be discomfort. So it sounds like you've found that mental place. Could you give any advice to the people out there that maybe aren't able to get in that mental mindset as easily? What are some of the things they should be focusing on to get there and to be able to work, you know, hard like somebody like yourself has?
You mean to get really lean?
Yeah, the mental mindset that it takes to be able to maintain that focus, because it sounds like for you that is a huge attribute.
I think it all comes down to what you actually truly want. Mm. Not what you say you want, or not what you think you want, or not what you tell everyone else you want. You have to really want to achieve and to hit a goal if you're going to take yourself there. And if you don't really want to drop body fat or feel that level of discomfort to get there, you clearly don't actually want to win.
Hmm.
You might say that you do because your coach wants to hear that, or you think it gives you a bit of kudos with your friends. But unless you really want to do something, you're never going to achieve it. So I don't find sticking to plans day in, day out, I don't find that a chore, because I truly love what I do and I love every meal I make myself. If I wanted to eat something different, I'd eat something different.
Yeah.
what I choose. And people were like, oh God, you're so disciplined. And I think, well, no, I'm just doing everything I can every single day to make sure I achieve what I really want to achieve. It's like anything. It's like writing an essay. If you don't really want to get a first on your essay, then you can procrastinate and go on Facebook. If you actually want to achieve the grade, you've got to put the hours in. So you can kid yourself and tell everyone else that a lot of the people that do the speaking and vocalise their determination are actually the ones that aren't truly very determined to do it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I assume that when you are dieting, at some point there probably is a refeed or a cheat meal. And I feel like in my mind, what I end up getting out of that is kind of like a 2-hour break where, you know, I'm focusing on what I need to do, what my next meal is going to be. I'm focusing on maintaining everything I need to do to be my best. And then after I've eaten like a refeed and after I get those calories in me when I'm very lean, it's almost like I don't have to think about that next meal for a couple hours and I get that mental break. For us, I think it's really like a relaxing time. Do you have a different cheat meal schedule than Jordan does? Because I assume you guys probably don't, you know, depending on the diet, you probably don't always get to have like that relaxation point at the same time if you're both dieting. How would you suggest that somebody handles that? Because I feel like I what this comes down to is I have a listener here who is getting ready to start her first diet with her significant other. And she's concerned going in about, you know, how that dynamic is going to unfold, where she's going to be suffering and this guy's going to be able to eat a lot more than she is. How do you deal with that? Because I'm sure in general, you're seeing Jordan eat a lot more food than you are. Does that affect you in any way?
Okay, well, firstly, for the person who's worried about comfort, don't even start comfort thinking about a refeed or a cheat meal. You've got to start a comfort thinking, yeah, let's string together a good month and get this process rolling.
Yeah,
you shouldn't be worrying about a cheat meal because it won't be happening for a while. So that's my advice there, is to focus on the goal.
Yeah,
and when you need some more food or you need a cheat meal, enjoy it and think about it at the time. And when your partner needs one, just think about his enjoyment of it. I never get jealous if Jordan's allowed a meal. I mean, the dynamics with myself and Jordan, to be honest, because I do stay so lean, if we're both starting at the same time and Jordan gets to a point where he needs some extra food.
Wait, are you calling Jordan fat?
Yeah. Cuddly. When he gets to the point where he needs some extra food in his diet, I can always jump in on the meal because I'm always lean enough to tolerate it. And that's just us, so we're fortunate in that respect. But also, my food is high. At the moment, my training day carbs, for example, are 455 grams.
Wow.
So my post-workout meal, which I've just eaten, was 240. So if he needs a meal, we'll go out post-workout. I probably won't be able to eat 240 grams of carbs in a post-workout meal, like, easily. Like, say we went for sushi or something, that's a hell of a lot of rolls.
Yeah.
So I'm never really going to be at risk of overeating.
Hmm.
So we time it that way. But I wouldn't... But there have obviously been times years ago when Jordan was eating pizza and Donos and I had broccoli or whatever. And that was harder then because obviously you do think, I was more normal then as well. And every part of me did think, I could have a slice of that. That would be nice. But then ultimately, like I said, it goes back to focus. I'm pleased when Jordan is lean enough and can have a refeed, because then as well, I know his session the next day is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
So mine's going to be better. And to be honest, I'd happily make him the food. I'm always like, when can I bake you something? When can I make you food? So it's just, you've just got to switch off, focus on your own path, and enjoy other people's enjoyment around food. Because life is fun anyway. You don't have to eat.
Yeah.
Have fun. So it's just a switch of mindset, I think. I mean, we were talking about this the other day, actually, like how we used to go out for more meals and things socially when I wasn't dieting and things like that. And they were really fun and really nice. But just enjoy them when you can do them. And otherwise, try not to worry too much about it, because you've both chosen the path of diet and training. And it is a little bit restrictive at times. And that's kind of what you've written yourself into. So if that's not what you enjoy or not what you want to do, then perhaps question the whole process itself.
I think that's great advice.
Muscle Minds is made possible in part by Jordan Peters. If you've enjoyed listening to Jordan today, check out his website, trainedbyjp.com. The site offers over 50 hours of video content covering everything from the most basic approach to training and nutrition for beginners, all the way through advanced anabolic and insulin strategies for seasoned competitors. You can follow Jordan and Corin's blog as they prep for their next shows and have questions answered daily on their forum section. So check out trainedbyjp.com. If you've enjoyed Scott Stevenson's contribution to Muscle Minds, you can learn more about him, his products, and his services at his website, fortitudetraining.net. Those who purchase Scott's book or any of his coaching products receive a free subscription to his message board where he answers questions daily. So check out fortitudetraining.net.
On the note of food, I've got another listener question here. Given gigantic meals that Jordan talks about eating on Muscle Minds, how do you and Jordan deal with your shopping and your food preparation with two elite athletes? Also, how much does the food bill come to per week?
I'll answer this one.
Okay.
Corin just does everything.
Oh, wow.
Scott's been witness to this.
Yeah.
Yes, pretty much. I think it's such an easy arrangement because Corin has so much energy that it would be almost cruel not to let her make use of that and get things done. She enjoys it. She really does. It's so cool. Yeah, it's a very mutually beneficial relationship they have in many ways. It's pretty cool.
In all seriousness, like Scott's not joking, you can't slow her down. It's funny to watch, and Scott and I have sat there joking about the way she moves around the room.
I'm not even aware I'm moving fast. I've just often got a schedule, and I need to be on time.
But so she just does everything. I don't even have to think, which makes me sound very, very fortunate, and I am very, very grateful for it. Because otherwise, half the time, I'd probably forget to eat.
No kidding.
I'd forget what I'm meant to be eating. But most of the time, she'll just hand me a Tupperware box and just tell me to eat it.
It'll have a label on it. It says Jordan Meal 3 at 3 p.m. or something.
Or she'll send me a text and just be like, have you eaten? And then I'll be like, oh, shit, where's my meal? Oh, it's in my bag. So yeah, these are some of the dynamics between us that have allowed us to, I suppose, to get to where we are.
Here's an example. When I was there in the UK, and Jordan and Corin were just being wonderful and taking me around. We did a Fortitude training camp and then Body Power, and we were driving over to Body Power. I believe this was the trip, and Jordan was cashed out. Just kind of halfway snoring away and just sleeping. And it was time for a meal. So we just pulled off the road. Corin knew this, pulled off the road, found a little restaurant, went in, got a water to be hospitable and, you know, maybe, I don't know, use the bathroom, I think too. And then busted out the Tupperware in the back of the trunk and had the meal right there in the parking lot. I think maybe we brought it inside and maybe got a drink or something like that. But like that was completely engineered by Corin. I mean, Jordan would have just kept on sleeping probably for the next 2 hours until we arrived. Yeah. But she just made it happen, and it just worked wonderfully. It stayed right on, and it was seamless. It wasn't like, oh, geez, we got to eat again. It's just I think maybe the only question was, what flavor protein powder do you want this time? Something like that. So, yeah, they worked beautifully together. It was quite nice.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
So, Corin, on that note, too, we've talked to Jordan. He's mentioned things about how you can read his physique and you know what to do with him. You know what decisions to make, and you've helped him, you know, progress. I have a listener who wrote in, I was wondering what Corin finds to be the best way to approach Jordan with honest feedback. And was there an initial point where she didn't feel as comfortable with being honest with him?
It's taken time to get to know the process. Like, I've learned a hell of a lot. Obviously, being around Jordan every day and seeing his physique is great, because you get to spot when it's flat, when it's full, when it's, you know, the why. And obviously, I've learned a lot about the process of bodybuilding through Scott as well. Like, I wouldn't know a thing. Like, going back to the body power trip as well, you know, we were sitting there of an evening on some really cool, like, farm. That was really weird as well. There was, like, sheep outside, but it was a really nice little place that we stayed. And, like, it was literally, like, story time. It was just eyes wide open, you know, chin rested on hands, being like, oh, about this. And just when that happens, I literally just have to absorb as much as I can, which is probably about 10%.
Yeah.
I'm like, so I've had a lot of knowledgeable people around me to help me form decisions. So in terms of confidence with giving Jordan honest feedback, yeah, like, it's actually only now that I feel confident to do it. And again, it's given me confidence. So say, again, last year when we were all in Birmingham, Scott was prepping Jordan then at the time. And I would vocalise something that I thought was right. And then it was really helpful and gave me confidence when Scott confirmed that it was right. It was kind of like the confirmation that I was seeing the right thing, or maybe suggesting the right thing. But yeah, even now, like, I know that if it's not something that you want to hear, it's going to be harder to say, and there might be 5 minutes of a bit of a huff and a puff, a bit of a snap back. But then as soon as, I think now we're both at that stage where Jordan does listen to what, not just my opinion, but he's more open to everyone's opinion, to be honest. Because when he was a bit younger, it was just more a pursuit to do cool stuff and just try everything. Because he's like a kid in a candy store, with life kind of thing, and training thing. So he is more, as he's matured, he does listen to everyone a little bit more. So I will now make a suggestion, and he will listen. And like I said, initially, even if he thinks I might be incorrect, or even if I am incorrect, he'll actually think about it and take it on board. Because I think he knows that my opinion is a little bit more valid now, because it's based on a lot of experience that we've had together. So it's taken time.
Like, I have a lot of faith in her decisions. Like, so for the last 8 weeks, maybe longer, 10 weeks, she's been obviously doing my diet, and she made some dietary changes yesterday that would have been implemented today. I don't know what they are. I haven't even asked. She's just made the changes.
No kidding.
I genuinely have no idea what I've eaten less today.
Wow.
Because she's prepped my food, and I might ask later, but I probably won't, because I don't even care, because I know she'd have got it right. So that's where we're at now with this, which is kind of weird, I suppose. But that's it's just the way that we work when we're clicking well together. I can't really explain it. It's just like we know what each other is thinking a lot of the time. So a lot of the time, nothing needs to be said. But I don't need to even check what dietary changes she's made. I just know that they'll be the right ones. And then when we get to the end of the week, she'll make my changes for the week after. And again, I guarantee you I won't even ask.
I think it's kind of got to that stage as well. Like, when we, both of us now, we got our own preps. I mean, we could prep ourselves.
Yeah.
In terms of, we know what needs to be done, and you know the goal. So it's kind of easy. I mean, like, Jordan probably knows what I've done to his diet because it would have been the same thing that he would have done anyway. Like, we're not, I'm not making game changing, you know, like drastic decisions. And same with me, like, Jordan will, when I'm prepping, and he makes a suggestion about, or not even when I'm prepping, actually, in off season as much as on season, he'll say, you should probably increase your carbs here, or I think you should just remove fats there, or whatever.
Mm.
And I'll know that that's coming. Like, I'll know it needs to be done. It's just kind of always nice to have that confirmation. And we're both lucky as well that we talk to Scott pretty much on a daily basis. So whenever we're unsure of something, or we want an opinion or another perspective, because it is easy to lose perspective when, you know, you're just in a bubble with the two of you.
Yeah.
Or you simply can't find the answer to some stuff. Like, we're just not smart enough sometimes, and we need a PhD on our hand. So, we're lucky we've got that as well. And Jordan's obviously got friends that compete themselves, and if he's ever unsure, or you just sometimes just want someone else to go, yep, that's cool, and or step in and say, big mistake, have you thought about X?
Hmm.
And then it might have been something that had eluded both of us, either because we weren't aware of it or because we've overlooked it. So I feel like with both of our preps, they're all just like a mutual prep now between a lot of people.
But one thing that I did want for this year would be the first time where it was, at the end of the day, Corin calling the shots with mine and me calling the shots with her. Because I think if you can keep everything in-house, once you've learned enough and you're confident enough to do it, seeing someone on a daily basis allows you to make more accurate decisions.
Hmm.
But like, then there's but I think the way that we go about our preps essentially is everything that I've learned from Scott. So there's nothing that's changed in the way that we set up our food or the way we manipulate our food. That's unchanged. Because I just think that what he taught us is the most efficient way to do things.
Yeah.
But just this year, I want to have a crack at just keeping that between me and her.
Hmm.
And just to see how effective that can be. And I'm confident as long as we don't fall out or argue, which I don't really see us doing that, then I think that would be a good thing. But we'll see how that goes.
That's really interesting. So I'm going to ask you a question, Corin, that I've just asked Jordan a little bit ago. You know, looking at Jordan's Facebook page and looking at his pictures, I see this massive progression. And you knew him before he was the size that he is today. Would you have ever guessed that Jordan would have made this kind of progress?
The easy thing to say would be, no, I never thought he would. But yeah, I knew he would.
Yeah.
The minute he said that he wants to look and be humongous, it's just an inevitability.
Because
that's what it's like. Like, it's a relentless pursuit, and Jordan will not stop until he's achieved it. So it's quite funny as well, because I've seen Jordan every day for so long. And obviously he was, in comparison, like 70 kilos or something when I first saw him, I guess. But I haven't really seen him grow. Like, I don't look at him and think, oh, you're like 50 kilos heavier than when I first met you. Because it's been so gradual. And to me, Jordan is that's the body I see every day. So my view of normality is horribly skewed.
Yeah.
Like, when I see, like, normal, in inverted commas, people, I can't really comprehend it. I'm like, it's a bit missing there. or these other little weird poppy out muscles. Like, so it's strange because I don't really realise how far he's come, because I've seen it every day. And unless you've had sort of a year away from someone and you see them again, you don't kind of notice how much they've changed.
Yeah.
But I knew when he said what he wanted to be and how big he wanted to be.
Hmm.
And we're still on the way up as well. There's no way he's finished. So, yeah, I believe he'd get there. It just knew it would, just because I know what he's like.
Interesting. I know that looking at myself in the mirror, you know, I can relate to that. Or, you know, looking at a significant other that you've been in a relationship with for a long time, the same thing could happen with, like, wow, I didn't realize your hair got so long. So I think everybody at home can relate to this.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you don't see it because it's happening under your nose.
Yeah.
It's only when you look back at it. The other day, actually, someone commented on a really old photo of me and Jordan. It must be about 5 years old or something. And me and Jordan were like, oh my God. Like, we've both got no muscle. And it was a really old photo, but I don't notice sort of how far he's come or I've come until I get a reminder of that. So it's strange, but yeah, I mean, whatever he says he's going to do, he'll do.
I can
put money on that.
He had mentioned that this is the very first time that we had ever recorded together. I asked how people react to him in public, if he notices, like, people staring and stuff. And he said, no, I don't, but Corin does. So does Jordan stand out in public? And is he totally oblivious to this?
He does stand out in public, yeah. Yeah, I think he is oblivious, really. Often he's just on his phone, like Instagramming or something. But he won't notice when someone, like, walks past. He's like, oh my God. Or I find children the most amusing because they're like, Mummy, look at that man. And then he's standing right next to him and Jordan will even sort of notice. I mean, in some settings he does stand out. But like he doesn't try to stand out. It's not like he's wearing hot pants and a vest.
Yeah.
Sort of flexing in the corner or anything like that. He's just, I think when you get, you know, if you're a 7 foot tall individual, you're going to stand out because you're different.
Yeah.
You know, so he's different because he's wider than he is tall.
Yeah, for sure.
He sticks out.
I'm sure the two of you are a pair, and I've seen tons of pictures of Frank, the dog that you guys have, and he is no exception. It's a whole household of just jacked people. He's and animal.
Yeah, definitely. It's an odd household.
So somebody writes in asking about advice for anabolics for bikini girls. And what are your thoughts on a bikini girl that wants to get into anabolics, you know, something like Anavar or Prima Bolan? And they had a follow-up question, too, which was doing things like hip thrusts with heavy weight and cable kickbacks. Is this ever going to compare to squatting and deadlifting? Which I know the answer to the second part.
The second part, no. Yeah, they're good accessory moves, and they do help. Say you're using training to burn some more calories, they're great to put in. And I do like direct glute work. I do use the abductor machine. I have done, like, pull-throughs on the machine. And things like that. So I'm not against them, but don't neglect the compounds. Don't replace the compounds, I think is probably the correct thing to say. Do those as well. And then do your accessory stuff as it should be an accessory. In terms of the first part of the question, let's be honest. I'm sure the very top bikini girls in the sport do take anabolics, and that's why they are as exceptional as they are. But if you're just starting out in general, don't turn to anabolics as a female or as a male, but especially as a female. And in the bikini class, you don't, in my opinion, need to touch them because you don't need an excessive amount of muscle mass. So I feel that you can grow the required amount of tissue naturally just with a really well-structured diet and training plan. a bit and time. Obviously, it's going to take time to build tissue. But there's no need, in my opinion, to use anabolics as a bikini girl. It's, and if you're, if you fit in well to that criteria, then chances are you're quite lean naturally anyway.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be needing to use anabolics to aid fat loss in any way. So I would really avoid them. And let's not forget as well that the bikini category is all about how glamorous you are. And the best girls are the prettiest as well. And if you're going to start dabbling with anabolics, that's going to have an impact on the visual too, especially irresponsible use. So I don't think it's necessary for the bikini competitors.
That makes sense. Obviously, then, you know, moving into, you know, the larger, more muscular divisions, something like Osterine, is that something that you would suggest to a female?
No. Again, there's still side effects to Osterine that you're not going to want to experience. And I think, as a my perspective on it generally is, don't use anything if you don't have to. Give yourself time naturally. However, if you are going to go into the more muscular classes, it is, in inverted commas, a little bit more acceptable and potentially necessary to use something.
Sure.
But I stick more so to just a very, very low dose of Anavar. But again, last case scenario, really, don't turn to it. It's not what's going to make you a good competitor.
Yeah.
Do the hard work naturally first, and then continue to do the hard work with it in, if it's something you've chosen to do and have really thought about it carefully. And then obviously get very good advice in using it, and just be as moderate as you possibly can. But a no to Osterine, I wouldn't advise that.
Okay, right on. I've seen girls make progress with as little as 5 milligrams of Anavar. Would you consider that to be what you're talking about when you say low doses?
Absolutely. From a personal perspective, that's all I would start a cycle on myself. And I obviously compete in one of the most muscular classes as well.
Sure.
So I take it up across a prep, but I would only ever start on 5.
Hmm.
And if you get what you want from 5, there's absolutely no need to increase it at all. So 5, yeah, you can absolutely see benefits from 5 milligrams.
When did you decide for yourself that it was time to introduce performance-enhancing drugs into the program?
When powerlifting got more serious, shall we say, when there was the potential to really do well and win European titles, world titles, it then got to a stage where you weigh up the options and you weigh up the benefits of it. And they, for me, at that point, it seemed appropriate, because what I was trying to achieve, let's face it, wasn't going to happen without assistance. And nobody else around me at that competition was going to be unaided. But I had put a lot of time in without anything before even contemplating or breaching the option. It wasn't an option. And now that it's funny, really. Now it's kind of gone full circle. I've introduced it, I've used it, and now I'm going back and using less and less. And my intention from now, as I develop as a competitor, is to use even less as the years go on, eventually with just using it for maybe 6 to 8 weeks prior to a competition.
Interesting.
I've used it for longer. I got where I needed to be almost. And then when it gets reintroduced, I muscle memory just bounces straight back. And then it's just a case of muscle preservation throughout prep, and you sort of start eating into food a little bit more, and it just protects that tissue, and then it'll come straight back out, because I don't need it in off season. If I'm not stepping on stage or I'm not stepping under a bar, I don't want to be anywhere near it, in honesty. So use it if and when you feel the benefits of it and your goals potentially warrant it, but until you're there, or if you ever get there, just avoid it. Just be stubborn.
Corin, I have a question for you that to backtrack about one question back and then one, I think, right when we started. It's kind of an obvious one, but I want to hear your thoughts on it. Do you see a connection between the mentality that someone might have, let's say it's a bikini competitor who's thinking about cheat meals before they even started their diet, and also in a division where the idea is that you're not really looking for much muscularity, is even considering something like using steroids? Is this something you're seeing in the UK? Because it certainly seems to be in the US.
Yeah.
In honesty, I think everyone has still got the misconception that if they chuck in a bit of Anavar, they'll be fine and their physique will suddenly transform. I mean, it's a cliche, isn't it? That you take these magic pills or whatever and all of a sudden you look fantastic. And yeah, I think there's a real, especially like it's probably the same in the US, but in the UK there's such a kind of an importance and a want for people to step on stage because they think it's what they should be doing. And it's very fashionable to be a bikini athlete. So they're just looking for a really quick, easy way to do it. And they kind of think, oh, I'll do that and then I'll look great and then that'll be an easier prep. So they don't really realise that using things doesn't make anything any easier. Doesn't transform your physique. You can't sit on your bum and just take things. Like, it doesn't work like that, I'm afraid. You know? So yeah, definitely there is a connection between people not really being focused on the goal enough to want to work for it in the first place. And then, like you said, obviously thinking about the wrong processes. So thinking about cheat meals, thinking about Anavar, when really they should be thinking about having a perfect day of diet and really just hammering their training. So definitely the same mentality, looking for an easy route and also potentially misunderstanding the methods of which to get there.
Yeah. Do you think some of that misunderstanding comes from the prevalence of steroid use and how easily and often it's talked about? And also the same thing with cheat meals, people posting pictures of their cheat meals on their Instagram or what have you. It seems if you just were a complete newbie and you came into the scene and you gathered together like the most obvious bits and pieces of evidence, that's what you're going to see. People talking about their cheat meals, people talking about doing no cardio, people talking about the quick and easy way. What are you seeing over there?
Definitely. Like, you're 100% right. I completely concur with everything you've just said. If I was a newbie going, just trying to start out with this, I wouldn't have a clue. We all know what social media is like. People put out what they want people to see, and we all know that's not the reality.
Yeah.
So I think as a beginner, ignore Instagram, Facebook, social media, and actually just find a decent coach who's going to A, give you the right instruction, the right opinion, and is going to lead you down a progressive path, not just dump you halfway through one and go, here we go, take 50 milligrams of Anavar and have a cheat meal every week.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you're 100% right. It all stems from these public celebrities that we have that rave about pizza and gear and whatnot, and it must be really hard. So I'm not criticizing or blaming people for having that misdirection. They just need to be told that that's not the right way. They need to be aware that they're being misdirected, definitely.
So let's say hypothetically that there was a cataclysmic event and Trained by JP was no longer, so you guys weren't available as coaches. What would you suggest? What would be like kind of the steps for a newbie women's competitor in terms of finding a coach?
I think, we all do publicize over Facebook and Instagram and things. But I think I would. It's tough. It really is. I don't.
Yeah. How do you screen them, right? I mean, what do you. I mean, like, it's tough to do.
I'd sort of I go by results. If you know, if someone's got a good, if an individual's got a website, like an official website or forum or some sort of communication that isn't purely Instagram or Facebook, that's probably a good one, because it means they're taking it a bit more seriously. Mm. Hopefully they'll have like testimonials or pictures on there. And I'm not just talking about these flash, oh, look at this 4-day transformation picture of X to Y. And I'm talking about real, true, honest testimonies that you'll read. There's a couple on our page and stuff. And the people say, oh, I've been working with Jordan for a year. Now, that's a good sign, because no one's trying to pretend that it happened overnight.
Yeah.
You know, look for a coach that's got good history or good track record with lots of different types of people and physiques. Maybe not just competitors, maybe people that just got in shape for their wedding, you know, or just got in shape for their holiday. Because if that's more you, if they're only bounding about pictures of massive guys going from fat to shredded, that's not you. Like, as a female starting out, that's not what you're trying to achieve. So maybe look a little bit lower key at first. Try and get some local advice first from someone you can actually talk to, and then progress it onwards. But yeah, it's absolutely horrible to try and find a coach, but I think just don't rush into it. And, you know, do sort of ask questions as well. If you want to hire someone and they haven't got the time to answer the simple initial questions, then they're clearly not going to give you the time or the care or the attention. So ask the questions you need to ask and get the answers you want, and then you can try and commit to a coach. But don't just do it on face value or in a rush. Spend a bit of time thinking about it.
I'll add something here. I think it's important when you first start out to try to understand just some of the basics of diet. So one of the things that shocked me quite a lot is that people don't understand what a caloric deficit is. And they won't understand that you cannot lose fat if you're not in a deficit. And they won't understand what their energy balance is or how to control their energy balance. And they won't understand necessarily that every activity they do across a day will contribute to this energy balance. Now, I think approaching a coach that has an evidence-based sort of criteria to the way they do things, and someone that can teach you accurate information so you can get a handle on why you're doing things, is really very important. Because if you don't understand why, I believe you're less inclined to carry out the activities. And for me, making progress in it through this has always been about learning. Now, obviously, I know that some people aren't as concerned about the why, but I think that's a big shame if you don't want to quiz everything. So I think as a beginner, if you can question everything and just paint this picture in your mind of even just the basics of what contributes to what outcome. So understanding even just the simplest things, like why do we need certain amounts of protein? Why do we need to necessarily break those meals of protein up per day? Why do we need to train heavy? Like, these are the questions that when they people have a good handle on them, they're going to make really good progress. But it's when they don't understand the science that underpins these things, that's where I think people are going to get lost by the wayside a little bit, and they're going to hinder their own progress. So for me, it's always been about seeking out someone that can tell me the why. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, I think it goes without saying that I absolutely agree. I think there's an unfortunate sort of catch-22 here, and that so many quote-unquote newbies coming in are drawn because of the Instagram promises,
yeah,
so to speak, of what you can see, you know, rapidly. You can eat cheat meals and you can, you know, have tremendous transformations really quickly, et cetera, et cetera. And that blinds them to the fact that having staying power is going to come from being a student. Hmm. That, you know, if they want to do something that's sustainable in terms of living a healthy lifestyle, or even if it's purely out of vanity, that eventually they're going to have to figure out how the nuts and bolts of this process fit together. And if they're taken in by a coach who promises them things, or they, you know, because of their publicity with the things we've just mentioned, who leaves them blind, leaves them dependent upon that coach for information, doesn't explain to them how things are working, why they're working the way they do, is not a teacher by nature, is perhaps you might call, say, a scoundrel or worse, then you've got an unfortunate situation for those women, or even guys too. Men can be just as susceptible to this as well.
Sure.
I think
maybe as well, if you are starting out and like you're focused on the goal, it might be beneficial as well just to join forums, first of all, like Scott's forum and whatever, and ask a few questions, like Jordan said, just to try and get an idea of the actual process.
Yeah.
And then a lot of coaches will offer like a one-off diet plan or something, and then you can take that, and it'll be a lot cheaper than coaching, and it's not as committed, and maybe you can take that and try and apply it to yourself. And then once you're kind of into the flow with things, it gives you that opportunity to realise if you do actually enjoy it, if you've got some more questions or whatever, before you actually commit to coaching. Because you probably don't need a coach, maybe. You might just need a bit of guidance. And the forums are great. Like, if you ever ask Scott a question, he'll give you the best answer. If you ever ask Jordan a question on the forum, he'll give you an answer, and it will help a lot. It can be something really silly, like I don't know that maybe you're a beginner and you don't even know really what a carbohydrate is, because believe it or not, some people don't know what a carbohydrate is.
Mm-hmm.
And you shouldn't feel embarrassed about not knowing. It's yeah. just not something that you know. You might know loads of stuff, but just not that. So work out the basics, like you said, first, and don't jump into anything. So just keep it into perspective that you've got other options other than jumping straight into a coach. Just try and learn first, ask questions, and then that will sort of see you in the right path, I think.
Yeah.
It's people. I've had a couple guys at one of the gyms here in town, and we started talking a couple days, and they started inquiring. One guy hasn't competed yet. The other guy has, and they're like, do you have spots? Can we hire you? I'm like, no, you can't. I think you should do your first show on your own. I think if you want to pick up my book, I think I may have to send him a copy of the book, get on my forum and get a good foundation, dig in and learn. There's a kind of a flip-flop mentality now, whereby many people just, they want, like, a coach is necessary. That's sort of the mentality of the industry, is that you need a coach. Some people need coaches more than others, but many don't really. They'll help themselves so much by learning to do as much as they possibly can until they kind of butt up against the limits of their own knowledge or their limits or their ability to gain new knowledge. And then you bring in a coach. So that's an anti-coaching stance that I keep kind of hidden, but it's really, it's part of being a teacher, and it's part of caring about people too, I think so.
Well, it makes so much sense too. I mean, you know, I was just talking to somebody about posing recently, and he immediately wanted to hire a posing coach, and he has a long time before the show, and he knows nothing about it. So my suggestion to him was, like, go online first and just learn what the poses are, because he didn't even know. And I said, you know, teach yourself this stuff, and it might not be good, but figure out what the poses are and figure out how to stand, you know, and then from there, bring a coach in who can tweak those things. Otherwise, you're going to spend all this time just trying to understand the basics. So I think financially, you'd end up benefiting too, because you could do, like you said, a lot of this on your own. And then, you know, as you're saying, bring somebody in when things start to get a little bit more complicated.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, definitely.
I've got one more question here about the performance enhancing drugs. And I really wanted to ask it because we had two separate women that had written in, and they wanted to know about insulin and what your thoughts were. If you were comfortable with sharing your own specifics, you know, when you decided to employ insulin, and what did you find the reasons were that were appropriate for you to start? Also, does your protocol differ in any way than it would from a male of the same weight?
Insulin, okay. I only use it in this off-season phase. So when I'm not doing competition, as I said, I come completely off all anabolics. So in order to kind of preserve as much tissue as possible and fight the inevitable, I use growth hormone and insulin. I use that pre-workout and post-workout. And I would take, I mean, I'm on a lot of carbohydrates, so obviously insulin is dose dependent. It is a dangerous thing to be using and meddling with. So obviously, if you're not using any carbohydrates, don't take insulin.
Right.
But I use it pre and I use it post, and a very moderate amount, and I'll take it up if needed. So I started off with just 4 I use pre and 4 I use post. And then at the moment, I'm up to 8 and 8 because my carbohydrate intake allows for that. As soon as I go back on anabolics, I will take out the insulin. Would the protocol differ if I was a male? It wouldn't. Not the use of GH and Slin. However, if I was, you wouldn't necessarily have to use it if you were a male and you were staying on anabolics. I only use it because I come off. So it's going to help me to maintain tissue and also recovery. When you come off anabolics, your recovery takes a hit.
Yeah.
So if you're going to keep recovering from these sessions, because my training doesn't change and I'm not prepared for that to change. So in order for me to keep going in, I need something to help me. So if I was a guy, then you wouldn't necessarily need to use it if you're going to stay on anabolics or whatever, but it would be an interesting thing to use during a cruise phase potentially, or if you're PCTing, or if you're a natural guy again, you can use that. But it's all dependent on it's person specific. Obviously, your diet dictates it.
Sure.
And whereabouts you are in terms of your year, your periodizing, the drugs and your training and comp as well. Some people say that insulin makes and growth makes your butt larger or makes you store fat in stubborn areas.
Yeah.
So again, I'm lean, so I don't have any issue. We actually kept it out initially. I didn't go straight back on it, which was a mistake in hindsight, because had I put it straight into the mix as soon as I came off cycle, I think I would have retained more tissue. I want to have a smaller waist next year on stage. So we didn't put it in just in case it was going to create any detriment to that. But I don't actually feel it does. And I haven't gained anybody fat from using insulin. So it's definitely something to consider. But I wouldn't, again, use it in a blasé fashion. I wouldn't use it if you don't use other things. It's a useful tool, but you do need to use it very carefully and get good advice on it. But it wouldn't largely differ between male and female.
Okay.
I think, really.
Cool. I've got just two more questions here, and that kind of wraps us up with everything. We had a really nice turnout in questions, so thank you everybody who had written these in, because these are really awesome, and it's really made the show great. Who are some of the people that you look up to, people that you admire, male or female, in bodybuilding, powerlifting, or just life in general?
I mean, I love Juliana Malacan. I love her physique.
She's awesome.
It's just beautiful. There's another lady, and I always mispronounce her name, but she's called Daria, isn't she? Daria Diossi, is it? And she's a Russian competitor, and she's the NABBA and WFF pro. And to me, out of all the physiques I've ever seen, ever, she's the ultimate. She's absolutely incredible. I've never met her. I don't know anything about her. She's not super famous, as far as I know. But I just admire her beyond. I admire loads of people, really. There's another girl called Cleo Van Witt. She's a powerlifter. And she's, again, incredible. She's Australian. She holds, like, all the Australian records. And when I see her training videos on Instagram, I just think, I'm gonna quit powerlifting because she's that good. She's brilliant. And we've met her last year when I did the powerlifting pro ball at the Arnold. And she was lovely as well. She's incredible. Just so inspiring to watch her lift as well. Loads of people inspire me.
I'm sure.
Susan Salinger, because she does. I've mispronounced her name as well. She does powerlifting and physique. She's a pro in both of those. So again, that's kind of what I aspire to. So she's just incredible. She holds, again, a bazillion records in powerlifting. And whenever I watch her lift, it's just phenomenal. I'm inspired by many people, not just to do bodybuilding and powerlifting. Anyone who works really, really hard and is a little freaky, I love. So that.
Interesting. Last question I have for you here. If you were to say not be in the fitness world anymore, if tomorrow, say, you guys decided to quit trained by JP and you were going to do something completely different, and I know that's not going to happen, but if it were to, what would you do for a career? What would you like to do outside of this?
I've got two postgraduate. I'm doing my second master's now, but that is obviously sport related. I've got a previous postgraduate actually in applied meteorology and climatology, which is weather forecasting. Essentially. Yeah. Because I always thought I wanted to be a meteorologist. It turns out I didn't. and I've got that anyway, which is kind of cool. But if I had to go back and just be a totally different person, there's two options, actually, because I think about this all the time. I would either own a bakery and I would just make stuff and have a really cute little shop in there's a place called Brighton in England, and it's just a wonderful, lovely place. It's actually where Jordan's from. And I would open a little shop there and I would just be happy baking and feeding people, or I'd be a vet. So they're my two options.
Nice. So guys, that's about everything we have. Scott, did you have anything else that you'd like to ask?
No, just thanks for coming on, Corin. This was awesome.
Yeah, very cool. Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun, and thank you too, Jordan. I appreciate this. Has been, you know, what was really cool about this is to get both of your insights together. I honestly had somebody tell me that they said Jordan and Corin are like the power couple in fitness now, and I agree with it. You guys are really cool, and so I feel like this is more than just an interview with you, Corin. It was a kind of a look into your life and into your relationship with Jordan. We all know Jordan here on the show, and it's cool to get a chance to talk to his better half.
Thanks.
So what's your guys' plan for the rest of the day? You're done training legs. I assume there's going to be some cooking going on. Frank is probably hanging out there with you. What's the game plan?
Yep. Food. Corin will make some masterpiece meal. And then we've got to read some papers for another essay that we have due fairly soon.
See, Joel doesn't even know the due date.
I know it, just not off by heart.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I'll just get stuck into some more reading there, see if I can learn some more cool stuff.
Nice.
That's pretty much my plan for tonight.
And how about you, Scott? How are you feeling over there?
Not all that great, really. I fake it pretty good, but I'm gonna keep loading in the herbs and probably go back to bed. Just go into hibernation and then wake up, emerge from the cocoon.
Newer and better.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Well, this has been really exciting. Once again, thanks to Corin Ingman for coming on. Huge thanks to Jordan Peters and huge thanks to Dr. Scott Stevenson for the Advices Radio Network. This has been Muscle Minds episode number 5, and we are out of here, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you later.
Advices Radio Network.